Hello, it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. Hello and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton and this is the show where we roll up our sleeves and get really stuck into people's personal stories. This week, we meet the lovely Miles and Giles, the founders of Mindful Chef.
It's hard, like it isn't easy. Definitely been times, you know, where we've probably left each other's company and been like, oh, for God's sake, not again. Like, you know, this guy, yeah.
What a twat.
Definitely, yeah. Well, all right, you said it, fam.
These chaps are super interesting and the journey of getting their business started has all the twists and turns and ups and downs that you would definitely imagine.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And now, here's the show. Miles and Giles, thank you so much for popping round to the house. I love what you're doing, and from the minute I heard about you guys, I just thought, what a brilliant setup and a great idea. Let's talk about you guys first and how you kind of got to this point where you're running this massively successful business, Mindful Chef. So first of all, how do you know each other?
Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, we went to school together in Devon. We were a couple of years apart, weren't we?
Yeah.
So we went to school in Exeter and spent pretty much from the age of, I guess, 11. In fact, I remember seeing you because Miles has got two older brothers. And I remember seeing Miles as the school had a prep school. And I remember seeing this cheeky little chappy in a, I think, did we wear caps in the prep school?
In the school before.
And I remember seeing this cheeky little chappy with a bit of a swagger when I must have been maybe 11 and Miles was 10 or something. And it was quite, I was like, oh, here he is. And
I had no idea who he was, to be honest. So.
So did you realise that as kids? Because we all kind of take whatever we're going through for granted, or it's just the norm. Did you realise, wow, you know, we are nearby to farms, we are eating locally grown produce? Did you kind of have an understanding of that as kids?
I mean, yes and no. You definitely appreciate it because you know you're growing up near beaches on the countryside, and there's lots of, you know, lots of our friends are farmers, etc. So you kind of appreciate it. But I remember went off to uni, age 18, 19. And I remember someone at uni, I went to the Midlands. And so there weren't many people from the West Country who went to the uni that I went to, which was Loughborough. And I remember someone saying in like the week one going, oh, you're from Devon. Oh, that must be absolutely lush down there. And being really fixated by how beautiful Devon was and how great it was. And I was like, oh yeah, it is. But if you spend your whole childhood there, you probably take a bit of it for granted.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was just normal, you know. We didn't go, you know, we didn't have lots of money growing up. We didn't go away every single year. Or we didn't go away that much at all, actually. We'd spend our summers just in a tent or a caravan, you know, in Cornwall, I would have it no other way, to be honest. We'd go down for 6 weeks, whatever it was. My mum would come, my dad would stay sort of at home working. And then, you know, I'd be running around. I'm lucky I've got two older brothers, a sister. So you can imagine sort of the chaos that ensues. Parents, you know what it's like. You just go, right, open up the caravan or the tent and you just go.
Yeah, but when the sun's out, that's the best thing, that you can just let kids roam free. and that's such a beautiful way to grow up. So whose idea was this? Who said, right, first of all, I've had an idea, and secondly, let's do this together?
So we had chatted about loads of ideas and obviously met up from time to time in London. And then it was on a fishing boat in Devon, friend's fishing boat, kind of small day boat, this little village called Limpston, which is near Exeter, where we grew up. And we were down there one summer in 2014. Mm-hmm. And basically, we had been chatting about ideas. And you know, kind of how you're working in a, at the time, Milo actually was probably really enjoying life because he was self-employed, and I was working for a big company, M&C Saatchi, and you're always thinking about what you can do next and challenges and the kind of, I think we both probably had that entrepreneurial kind of desire,
yeah,
but you just never knew, you know, didn't have a great idea immediately, and it often takes time to come to you. And then we were down in Devon on the fishing boat helping mates, and basically the fish would be caught. And you'd go out for a few hours, come back in, and they used to text the local villagers. So they used to send an SMS to 300-400 people and just say, this is what we've got in the catch today, as they come back in. Really, really basic.
How wonderful.
You know, whatever they had that day, send the text, and then they would land, put the fish on ice, and the villagers would literally be lining up at the dock, ready to buy whatever there was, as fresh as you like.
Wow.
And that was the kind of, I guess, the light bulb moment that said, oh, okay, this is quite cool. You can cut out the big old supply chains that currently exist. Mm. And if you could replicate this on a broader scale, obviously, it was amazing watching it in one tiny village, but how could you take that on a broader scale? And that's kind of what got us chatting and thinking about how we could take it a little further afield, I guess.
Wow. So what, you know, what are the steps then? So you've had this idea that you grew up understanding that locally sourced food had benefited you and that it was also benefiting your local community and also the farmers and helping them stay independent and be able to do something that they love and do it well. But then how do you take that idea and actually turn it into reality? What were the steps? I'm sure it was a laborious process at times, but how did it work?
Yeah, it's quite difficult actually. In the beginning, it's, you know, when you go and ask a farmer for 10 steaks, or, you know, you go and say, I need 10 lots of kale or spinach or whatever it might be, you know, they kind of laugh in your face and go, well, this isn't really worth my time. So, you know, we'd drive around Devon and go into all these different sort of suppliers and producers, and we'd go and tell them what we were trying to achieve and what our sort of goals were and our mission was. And, you know, you get a lot of no's, and then you get the occasional yes, and then you go, okay, well, and they sort of believe in your idea, and they go, okay, well, maybe we can grow with these guys. They're going to maybe go somewhere, get somewhere. And that's sort of how you start, is you just go and find people who will supply you. You know, all of our suppliers in the early days were all from the West Country, where we grew up, around, you know, Devon, down in Cornwall, sort of all the fishermen and things. And that's how you start. You just find the suppliers, and then got a tiny little warehouse, sort of no bigger than probably half the size of this room. And, you know, first boxes went to family and friends, really. And the first, like, people who came to help were family and friends, you know. So it was nice in a sort of, in one respect, that sort of always maintained throughout sort of the team and the culture as well. Is we always say, you know, first employees, first customers, we're all family and friends, and that's how we want to treat everyone as we sort of move on as well. So it's quite a nice feeling.
Oh, you've done that. I got a sense of that as soon as I met you guys, that it all just felt very friendly and personal. And I think that's difficult with a company as big as yours now and as successful as it is. So in those early days, was the setup the same as it is now? Were you kind of preparing meals that people could then make at home? Did you start out like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly different. We've sort of managed to expand the range and things like that now. But it was, and it was very much an MVP, wasn't it, Giles?
What's MVP?
Essentially, it's just a fancy word for minimal viable product. So it's such, what can you do, the least amount of work, get it out of the door and just test it and see if it works. I think we do 16 recipes now. In the early days, we did 3 recipes. There was no choice whatsoever. You got what you got, what you were given, you know. And it was very much, let's just try this and see if it works. It's important to remember, not only was like the mission, okay, we're going to use these amazing local suppliers, but it was also, how can we be different? What's really important to us? As Giles said, I was self-employed. I was a personal trainer, nutritional coach. And really, with Giles's like sort of interest in sports as well, we've always been interested in healthy eating as well. And, you know, that's a pain point for a lot of people, is I don't know what healthy eating is, or I can't be bothered to shop for it, or I think it's really boring. So, you know, we're like, can we make healthy eating really like easy, but also really delicious for people as well. And sort of that's just how we started it. And we thought, will anyone actually like this? Will anyone buy it? And it was very much, let's just get boxes out of the door and see.
The toughest points would have been, we were still doing all the packing of the boxes ourselves. Now we've got to a point where we work with a really good third party who have a huge food distribution hub in the Midlands. But when it was ourselves, tiny warehouse in London, we were still delivering with a little van and using a couriers as well. We got home and I remember it was around November of that first year, because it was around the Black Friday was just coming in kind of 2015. It was just becoming popular. And we had done our drops and there was a load of courier boxes going out. And I remember getting home and it was just Miles and I shared the customer service responsibility on the phones and the emails. And I remember logging onto emails and going and being really knackered and being like, oh my goodness, there's so many emails come in, like way more than usual from customers. And the phone was going off the hook. And it turned out that one of our couriers, who sure a name remain nameless, they had just really underestimated Black Friday in general for all their other clients, you know, like Amazon, etc. And they had been deluged. And obviously, something has to give, haven't got enough drivers on the roads, etc. And they had just left something like 200 of our boxes were just not going to go out that day as promised to customers. So you get customers on Sunday, and rightly so, they've paid for this produce to arrive for their dinner. And you've got mums ringing up going, where's my box? And we didn't have a customer service team, and I was then ringing our account manager at the courier going, what's happened? I've got my mobile's going off the hook. And they said, we're really sorry, the boxes aren't going to go out. They might go out tomorrow. And I was like, what do you mean they might go out? And so I was basically up until something like 1:30 in the morning, just receiving calls and just apologizing and saying, I'm really sorry. And some people are saying, I haven't got anything else in my house. The local Tesco's closed. And you feel really bad. And I remember just thinking, goodness me, this is beyond our control. Someone else has messed up, but I'm trying to fix this myself. And obviously Milo is helping out in the inbox.
Whose idea was fresh food? Should have done a toothbrush.
I feel stressed out listening to this story. I'm panicked at the thought of that inbox and the responses. I mean, it's a huge responsibility to take something like that on.
Yeah, and you just kind of get through it. And then we got most of the boxes out the next day, and you send a kind of a handwritten apology note, and you try and turn things around. And I think that's what's good about being a small business. To be honest, most customers the next day when they reply to emails, etc., are like, look, guys, don't worry, I understand you're small. I understand it was a courier's fault. But yeah, you do. Though that was probably a pretty tough time, because you're knackered from the day of packing anyway. And I think you really appreciate having a weekend in most jobs when you go through that journey. And I think just having one day, just a Sunday, just to be able to kind of reset mentally as well as physically, and then be able to come back on a Monday morning fresh, ready to go. You can't, that counts for a lot.
It does. My God, I think I think because we're all getting so much more fast paced, people are neglecting that time out slightly, or, you know, just aren't having any. And that is tough for a human to be able to take that on and cope. It's a lot. What is healthy eating to you? How did you make that decision that, you know, you had a kind of baseline ethos as to what that would mean for you and your recipes?
I think in the early days, we were, one of the reasons for starting it was the challenge of working long hours, getting home late. And we actually said this in our first crowdfunding video. It was all about, you get home at like 8 or 9 after a pretty busy day, and you would just reach for the same thing on the supermarket shelf every day. It wouldn't necessarily be that bad for you. It would be just loads of pasta, loads of bread, loads of white rice, loads of refined carbs, which are fine in moderation. But I was finding particularly, and obviously Milo was nutritionist, personal trainer, so he knew his stuff and was really on it, but he obviously saw it with his clients, people struggling, needing help. And I just thought, do you know what, if you can cut out a little bit of all these processed refined carbs, not like a kind of, we're not like gluten-free warriors, but just cut out a few nights of it and have some more veg, some more protein, introduce more of them into your diet, I think it can provide some balance for you. And so that was our whole ethos initially, was let's remove any processed refined carbs, just put in loads of good veg, loads of protein, and see where it goes from there. And our hunch was that people, because I think people view their week in a kind of credit and debit system. You kind of, you get to the weekend, you go out, you have some pizzas, some burgers, some pasta, whatever it is. You have a few drinks, and then Monday comes around, you go back to work and you think, right, I'm gonna try and be a bit healthier this week. And so we were like, well, let's help people reset a little bit and just get a bit of balance. So that was the kind of initial founding idea behind what we had removed from the recipes.
And I guess also instilling that thought that, you know, it's about essentially feeling better. It's not, you know, there's no other goal apart from, you know, this is going to make you feel good. This is vibrant, lovely. That's what I've got whenever I've been with you guys or I've cooked with you, that it's all about what that's going to do for your system, how that's going to fuel you. Because, you know, much like you, sort of in my 20s, I would work these crazy long days, and then I would often end up in the pub next door to where I was filming and have like a vodka and chips and call that dinner and go, yeah, great. And equally in the morning, it would be like a coffee and some biscuits. Like, you just sort of were running on whatever was there. And I think you do realise, especially after you kind of hit 30 and onwards, that that's not sustainable and you don't feel good. And it is about fueling your body to just have energy.
Yeah, I mean, we've always stated, you know, this isn't some sort of diet delivery service. It is really, you know, the clue's in the name. It's called Mindful Chef, trying to be mindful of suppliers, ingredients, of customers, of how you feel. It's kind of like there's a big shift now, isn't there, in health and wellness anyway. It's no longer just, you know, prescriptive once you get ill, and, you know, everyone's trying to actually preventative in the first place. And just, I think we really, or generations past, have really taken for granted how much of a benefit food can have on, like, sort of what you're saying, just on feeling better. And why wouldn't you want to wake up each day and actually feel good and feel energized and ready to really tackle the day head on, and at the end of the day feel great as well. And, you know, that to me, I just think food plays a huge part in that. And if we're able to just help people a little bit for a couple of days of the week, that doesn't mean that you know, you go on to, like Giles says, to becoming some sort of wellness warrior but 100% of the time, because for most of us that just isn't a reality with life just gets in the way or throws you a curveball. But you know, just trying to find a bit more balance, I think, and helping people, that's what people are sort of after.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think we all weirdly underestimate, well, two things. First of all, just the power of food and making tiny, you know, changes or making choices that will benefit you. And also the kind of body-mind connection. We still see our brains sort of floating around detached from our own body. And it's like, of course, if you are fueling your body correctly, everything's, you know, your brain is part of that. It's all gonna work more efficiently, and you will just feel better. It's quite simple.
Yeah, and here's the really cool part about cooking that I like, and sort of recipe boxes, is that whole element of cooking.
Yeah.
You know, lots of our friends before we started, and still actually some of them, you know, they're ordering whatever, sort of, you know, just get it into your door and it's ready to go and you're just eating it straight away. And it's like, actually, you're missing that big process of cooking. You know, we're constantly connected, whether it be to our phones, to our laptops, to our iPads, to a TV, you know, and cooking, and when you're following a recipe, you actually have to take that time to just stop doing whatever else you're doing and just get involved in the process. And like you say, then you get connected a bit more to your mind and to your body and what you're doing, and the whole eating experience as well. You know, too many people just sit there and watch TV while they're eating, and actually if you can take the time, whether it just be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, to actually eat your food, if you've got somebody else there, engage with that person. You know, that's a really big sort of thing that's missing in a lot of people's day-to-day lives now, as we're sort of constantly on the go and working harder and online, is actually that connectivity with other people.
Yeah, you have the, I love the reviews, either on our, we have a kind of secret Facebook community for 1,000 customers, or on the Trustpilot type pages, where people write things like, oh, I never used to cook, but now I have 20 minutes, 30 minutes a night where I have three of your meals a week, and I'll just spend half an hour, whatever it is, and I'll put my phone upside down in the corner, either listen to a podcast or the radio or some music, whatever, but I'll just be in the moment just cooking up a dish. I'll get out 12 fresh ingredients and I'll just rustle up a dinner and I'll have kind of eat the rainbow will be in front of me and I'll be eating a load of fruit and veg. I'll be feeling good, but I'll also just be completely mentally switched off rather than, you know, rather than eating a ready meal and, I don't know, glued to your phone thinking about emails at 9 o'clock
at night.
And
it's so easily done. Like we all have to work so hard to not go down that route. It's, you know, it's so tempting that, you know, it's there. There could be an email to answer. I know that I'm guilty of that. Certainly if, who's that ringing on my doorbell? It was at this point that the doorbell rang, and I promise you, what happened next was a total coincidence. Guess what's being delivered? A Mindful Chef box.
Oh, look at that. Hey, it's like it was arranged.
That is brilliant.
Let's open. Let's see what's in there. So I always go for the vegan options because I've been vegan now since September.
I know,
fully.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it. It was an experiment, but Jessie's also on board now.
This wasn't planned.
Yeah. It was not staged. That's so weird. Right, let me get the booklet. So I've got number four. So I've got three meals here. What am I going to eat tonight? Teriyaki tofu with tender stem and carrot noodles. I mean, look at that. That is going to take me 30 minutes.
I cooked that up the other night, actually.
Did you? For,
like at a demonstration thing. 13. It went down very well.
Number 13.
What else have we got?
Roasted pepper lentils and olives with tender stem. Anything with olives is absolutely a dream. 15 minutes. That might be tonight because I've got all four kids here and I'm going to be absolutely knackered. Number 8. Creamy coconut and chickpea korma. That's a bit of Jesse Wood, that is. That's
Jesse
a bit of Jesse
over.
Wood. Yeah, he loves a bit of a curry. Well, I can't wait for that this evening. I'm very excited. So there are my bags. The ingredients are there. And so in there, Matt's going, what's in there? So in here, chilled produce.
Yeah.
So you've got bits and bobs that need to go in the fridge quite soon. So
is good timing, isn't it?
What I also love, I mean, I've got so many things to talk to you about, but what I love now we've just opened said box is that everything is measured out exactly. So you've got zero food waste. And anyone out there like myself and you, Milo, if you've got kids, it's so hard to not have food waste. If they're fussy, if they're not eating what you put in front of them, if you make too much, if I've got all four kids and I'm trying to cook and guess how much everyone needs. But this, so ideal that at the end of the day, you'll make the meal, you will eat the meal, there is no waste.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? It just makes it really simple for you, I think. And even if you don't have kids, I mean, I know my old clients and Gilo and the rest of people, you know, you just end up doing a bigger shop and then, you know, as we say, we're just all busier. Like people don't, it's not the same as it used to be. You know, people don't go on a Sunday to the big supermarket and do a huge shop anymore. Shopping's really disjointed. You're either getting some sort of takeout, you're going to your local shop, then you're hopefully getting a Mindful Chef and then you might go out with a friend. And you know, so it's really disjointed during the week and you end up just wasting food. Not only do you feel a bit guilty about it anyway because you have to throw it away, but it is quite a serious issue. You know, it's like the third biggest contributor to climate change. So actually that's what we really liked about when we thought, how can we get fresh produce from supplier to people's homes really quickly? Saw Resi boxes away, and that was one of the big reasons why we wanted to start this, was actually you completely get rid of food waste. So that's really cool, like sort of aspect of it.
We often forget that when we're doing, you know, we do startup talks, etc., and you don't, that was one of the reasons why we started the business, but you don't often talk about that as much. But the whole supply chain is absolutely, it's almost reinventing the supply chain in terms of behind supermarkets. Obviously, they're, you know, if you've got a big supermarket in one area, they've got to guess to an extent and forecast how many apples the supermarket will need that week. And obviously it's educated guessing games, but it's exactly that. Whereas with us, we're saying, because of the way that the system works, you have a cutoff and we know Fern's box has been ordered by Thursday at midnight. She'll get it on Sunday, for example. And so we know exactly what we need from suppliers. So we have, it's something like 0.25% wastage compared to much higher at the supermarket level. So it's pretty cool because you can just go, well, we need exactly these many items. And they come, come in, they get packed in the boxes and out they go. So it's reducing so much food waste that happens behind the scenes, not just at the, at the level of the consumer where you look in your fridge and go, oh, I've got a Wilto bag of spinach. I've got to chuck away that now.
Yeah, it's tricky because, again, you know, we can do our bit and we can try, you know, compost our food or also buy correct amounts if we can, or batch cook or freeze things, but it's not always realistic. And also some of it is out of our control. Like you say, when you go to some supermarkets, they are all about the display and these huge piles of bread, huge piles of carrots. And you just think, well, what, by Friday, if they've not all sold, where are they going? I don't know. It's not transparent enough for us to have that understanding. So I think if you know exactly, you know, what you're going to eat and that at the end of the meal, there is nothing to show for, then that is a nice feeling because we all want to do what we can to stop our planet from suffering as much as it is. It's under so much strain. And I think some of the time the control is unfortunately taken out of our hands. So it's nice when you can pull a bit of it back.
Yeah, with our bags that you just took out the box, pop them in your fridge. And then at the end of the week, it's nice just looking in the fridge and going, oh, it's empty.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, and you can clean your fridge. Yeah. Another bonus. So just rewinding a little bit, because as I'm massively interested in the food side of it and the dietary side of it and the environmental side of it, but also I'm very intrigued about your own personal drive and how you made this happen. So you're at the stage that you described a moment ago where you've got this set up, but it's mainly for your friends and your family, and you're kind of using it as a bit of a trial period to see if it works. How do you keep the faith that this is going to actually turn out well and you're going to be, you know, one day having your own office and supplying the whole country?
It's a journey.
Yeah, I think if you'd said to us, you know, maybe even 2 years ago, let alone 5 years ago, I think we've been going now, oh, you'd be sat in Fern's house doing a podcast at the moment, two blokes in Devon. I'd be like, absolutely not. It takes a lot of hard work. It's not easy. A lot of companies come and go since we've been around as well, doing a similar thing. We're quite lucky. We've got different backgrounds and what we bring to the business. We've always hired really smart, intelligent, hungry, generally younger people around us as well. We're not afraid to go, oh, you know more, let's bring you into the business and you can help out. But also, you know, in the early days, we were still working several jobs. You know, Giles went full-time first. I didn't go until a year later. Used to do 40 hours PTing and then do 20 hours working packing boxes with Giles. And we decided to only send on a Sunday and Monday initially as well, so lost the weekend there. Didn't quite think that one through.
Horrendous forward planning.
Yeah, that's it. But you know, you just, yeah, it's just hard work. I remember Giles and I would, you know, deliver all the boxes ourselves. We'd walk around like central London with our little box, like going into gyms and studios going, oh, we've got this idea, could you tell your clients about it? You know, begging for favours from friends, everyone. And I suppose, you know, you gradually just continue to grow, you get a bit of momentum. We didn't have very much money, so it was all just asking for favours essentially from everyone. And then finally had that momentum, got a little bit of money into the business. And then, as you say, you sort of get a slightly bigger warehouse unit, still not very big. And then you start getting your first team member or your second team member. You're like, okay, maybe we're onto something. But, you know, we're still, every year, you know, there's the next thing and you want to grow and do something else. So you're constantly striving to do something a bit more.
And how much of a strain did that put on your friendship? Because that's obviously been going a lot longer than the business. So how has that fared? Have you learned new things about each other from, you know, changing the dynamic of your relationship?
Yeah, I think we're relatively chilled blokes-ish. So you kind of, there's massive ups and downs, and actually lots of friends.
The roller coaster of the roller coaster. And Milo.
Yeah, the startup roller coaster. But it is true. You go through loads of ups and downs. The highs are really high. The lows are really low. But it helps with us that our professional backgrounds are coming from completely different places. Milo, health, nutrition, myself, brand and marketing. So you don't, number one, you don't butt heads in that way. you're not both two bankers who will just have the same skill sets and clash the whole time, which you hear a bit. But so you have that. But also, I think you've just got to accept, look, in the early days, particularly when Milo was talking about the packing element, like we sometimes on weekends, you do Monday to Friday in the office, which was our apartment, and then Saturday, Sunday, we'd go down to the warehouse. Initially, it was us and a couple of friends, and then us and a couple of staff. But you get there at like on Sundays. Some days it would be get there at 6:30 in the morning on a Sunday, pack all day, and then about 6 p.m. when the boxes are gone out with couriers. After we stopped driving our van because we realised we could only do like 40 drops, and that was us done. We would then go home, and then one of our mobiles would take the kind of the landline would direct to our mobiles, and we'd be the customer service team as well.
Wow.
And I remember at that time, I remember coming home one day actually to Charlotte, my fiance, and I just remember being almost at the edge. I was just like, it was a miserable January evening. It was dark and wet, and I got home and I just remember sitting my mobile by a radiator in the corner of the room, just going, oh my goodness, this is not the dream. And it's quite, in a weird way, although you do clash sometimes, it's quite nice to have another person on that journey. So you can chat through the stresses and the strains, and you have really good highs and you have really low lows. But having someone, I think, helps massively. I have loads of respect for people who start businesses on their own, because I think, wow, that must be tough. Mm. So yeah, it is a journey, but it's, you kind of, as I think, as you said, every week the numbers were going up, so it makes you think, oh, we're on something. And particularly with like online food, I mean, still, even with all the big boys like Ocado, online grocery only accounts for 7% of total grocery sales.
Really?
So 93% of all grocery sales in the UK are offline. And if you include that Ocado, Tesco, all the big guys, you just think, wow, there's going to be a shift here, and we're part of that shift. We're just a really small guy trying to punch above our weight. But it was fun, you know. You'd be driving the van around South London. I would be on the Instagram trying to grow the following, go and follow 50 accounts, then unfollow them.
Selfies of Giles, head out of the window, there's sunshine behind him. Yeah. I think we're quite lucky as well. We're not, we are slightly different ages. So we've also got like our own circle of friends outside as well, you know, separate to the ones just from school or whatever it is. So we're not in each other's pockets like 7 days a week the whole time. So you're also able to go and, you know, take a break every now and again, which Giles tells me he needs. So, you definitely have ups and downs, but you know, we're here together. We're still smiling.
But this is amazing because it kind of breaks that myth of that, you know, you should never work with friends, which I've had loads of people talk about. And I've heard of loads of relationships go disastrously wrong because, you know, friends have tried to start something together or one's hired the other and it doesn't work because the dynamic is just too different. But you've managed to navigate that. And as you say, you're sat here now, still friends.
I think as long as you're like really open, honest, transparent about what you want. And, you know, we're quite lucky and we've always had similar goals and sort of direction of where we want to take the business and what we want to do. And as long as you do that, I think, yeah, and you're good friends, it's fine. I think it's when people start hiding things or start, you know, not being as honest or as open as they should be, or necessarily maybe you are just having a lot of lows, you know, and it's hard. Like, it isn't easy. Definitely been times, you know, where we've probably left each other's company and been like, oh, for God's sake, not again. Like, you know, this guy, yeah.
What a twat.
Definitely, yeah. Well, all right, you said it, fam. But, you know, you definitely, yeah, you feel that. You can have those ways. But, you know, I think we've got a really good team around us. We've built a good culture. You know, we're lucky we're in two amazing industries of food, which is really exciting, and it has that impact on people, and then health and wellness as well. And sort of, so, you know, it's just a nice industry to be in as well.
Are you good at being honest with each other? Because I think, you know, a lot of friends will find that element difficult. Either asking for something, delegating, or setting boundaries can be near impossible for some people because they don't want to upset their friends or they don't want to be thought of as different or demanding or whatever. Are you good at that? Have you got better at that?
Yeah, I think we are. I think we've definitely got better at that. I'd say you just learn, don't you? As the journey goes on, you learn. The earlier you can be honest and upfront, it helps with any situation. And as we've grown the business, I mean, you know, that it was tiny in the early days. Now we've got 51 staff. Your responsibilities naturally overlap at times, and then as you become bigger, you just kind of divide them up in quite a clear way. And as long as you're clear with where those boundaries are and responsibilities lie, I think that's a recipe for success. But there's loads of crossover.
And you're good at taking the honesty as well as dishing it out. If one of you is honest to the other, how do you react? How do you take that?
Think pretty well, aren't we? What do you think? He's giggling.
No, yeah. I mean, I was just laughing at the question. I mean, I can't think of a moment where I've gone and, I mean, yeah, you said, oh, he's a twat. No, I haven't really felt that or been like, oh, God, Giles has said this. Need a moment. I don't think there's been that many instances, to be honest. Like, we're just quite open and honest. Like, also, we played a lot of sports. I'm from a family of like four, you know, two older brothers. You've got to be able to take it. Giles got two sisters, you know, that's not easy growing up. So you've got to take stuff from them. So yeah. I think we've got pretty thick skins anyway. And, you know, in this business, and if you are growing your own, like, you have to be able to take it and just sort of learn from whatever it is and try and move on.
Let's talk about something. I'm not sure whereabouts this came into the Mindful Chef journey, but your incredible charity initiative that I know has taken up a lot of your time, energy, and you're deeply passionate about it. Can you explain it to us?
Yes. Yeah, so we work with a charity called One Feeds Two, and essentially for every meal our customers buy, we donate a school meal to a child living in poverty. So at the moment, all of our meals go to Malawi, and actually Giles and I were lucky enough to visit it earlier in 2019, weren't we? I think March, May time.
About a year ago,
Which is amazing. We hadn't gone for, I think we started with them at the end of 2017, sort of started this initiative. And we never had the money to be able to do it, you know, like flights, and then also you've got to pay for accommodation, etc. over there. And it's quite a big ground thing for you just to go in and just be able to go and visit all the schools. So we were always like, well, we'd rather the money went towards the charity rather than pay for us to go out and see it. And then it got to the point where we thought, okay, well, to really be able to tell this story, you know, it's that sort of tangible aspect of we're doing it, it's amazing, and we know it makes a difference, but it's so far away, and especially for a lot of our community and customers as well. So we thought, okay, well, if we can go tell the story a bit better, see it, come back with our own stories and experiences as well, then surely that will help sort of grow the awareness. And it's amazing, like, sort of exclusive. We've just gone through 2 million meals now, which was our like big goal for 2020, and we're just going to try and increase that as well, just more initiatives, keep it going. But it is amazing, you know, like, I think we were there with the teachers, and nobody knows any different, because, you know, it's just day-to-day life. So everyone's pretty happy. They're just cracking on. But, you know, you ask teachers, so how many of these children, and it's one meal a day, and it's essentially their breakfast. And you go, so for how many of these children is this their only meal of the day? And they were saying it's probably about 60%, over 60%. This is their one meal of the day. Mm. And this is across Africa as well. You know, we were just in one very small part. And you know, you think, oh, whoa, that's quite, you know, that's huge. And then they're saying if they didn't have this meal, then they'd have to, their parents wouldn't send them to school. They'd send them out to either go and find food or to go and work for food, or work for money so they could have food. But actually what the program does, and what's the great thing about One Feeds Two, is it gets children to go to school. Their parents force them to go. They say, you're going to get food. Fantastic. And the only way for these children to get out of poverty themselves is through education. Mm. So we found school attendances are going up. They're doing better at school because they're full of energy because they've eaten. So, you know, it's a really nice thing for our community to be involved in. And yeah, we're quite proud of it, aren't we?
Yeah, very proud. I was amazed when we went over there. I was blown away by that 60% figure, because often actually we'll get asked in the UK by customers, or maybe when we're doing something on stage, people say, why don't you support a UK charity a bit closer to home? And we actually do support a few UK charities, but on this one we decided, in the UK largely there is a safety net. There are soup kitchens, etc. There are homeless shelters. In Africa, and specifically in Malawi, there's no safety net. So when, you know, it was very emotional going, but also amazing, because they're genuinely most people we met were really happy. They didn't know any different. But yeah, there's no safety net. So some of them were barefoot, walked to school for 2 hours through the countryside, got there. And that one meal that was donated by the Mindful Chef customers through One V's Two was, as Miles says, their only meal. And it's actually good because I think it's got the government involved over there. So they... the teachers are telling us that they used to serve it at lunchtime, and then the government said, no, can you serve it at breakfast time? Because then it will get kids into school on time, and therefore they'll be learning more throughout the day, and they'll be learning on full stomachs. Mm. So it was really cool, really powerful, and really cool to see. And yeah, very emotional. And we just thought to ourselves, God, if our little company can do this, and there are others doing it, but not many at the moment, then... goodness me, what can the big boys do if they all support charities like this?
Absolutely. I mean, the change could be insurmountable, and, you know, actually changing culturally how communities think about education, and there's that incentive of their, you know, their kids getting fed as well. It could create amazing change for future generations. I think it's such a brilliant thing that you're doing.
Yeah, and it's not just dropping aid in, you know, which is actually quite a big problem for local economies. It's actually getting the community involved, using the local suppliers, bring it into schools, using community workers to make the food, you know, to drop it off, etc., etc. So actually it's like a big full circle. Yeah. And a big loop, and it works really well within the community.
Who's the better cook out of you?
Difficult. Is it? I've definitely improved the most. You probably had a better starting point.
Giles can now fry some tofu.
Well done. I've seen you do that very, very skillfully as well. What are your specialities? What are your favourite dishes?
Mine's the butternut squash ribbons with meatballs. So the replacing some refined carbs with just taking a butternut squash and using a peeler and creating ribbons out of it. And we've got a couple of dishes like that. One's a kind of a Massaman curry style one as well, which is really tasty.
Got teriyaki salmon, which, if you ask me before Mindful Chef, do you just regularly knock that up on a Tuesday? Absolutely not. It'd be like a chili. And a butternut squash risotto. That's a vegan-based one. That's good as well.
Yum. You guys introduced me to jackfruit, actually. I hadn't used it. I was terrified of it before. I didn't trust it. It looked all wobbly in the packet. I thought, I'm not having that. And then that was one of my meals. And I was like, okay, I think I'm into jackfruit. And then I included a jackfruit thing in my last cookbook.
There you go.
There you
amazing.
Go.
Guys. Yeah, you're amazing. So amazing. Well, look, thank you so much for coming over today. I am going to be imminently rifling through that little bag there and perhaps making the teriyaki tofu, I think, this evening.
Delicious.
That's the one for me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for having
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, chaps.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Miles. Thank you, Giles. You wonderful people. And weirdly, I bumped into Giles the day after that in the supermarket. Very strange. Anyway, thanks for dropping by, chaps. Love you lot. Don't forget to subscribe to the new episode of Happy Place Weekly every Monday. You can do that for free via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on your smart speaker of choice. And to find out who's on next week's show, find us on Instagram at Happy Place Official, where we leave little tiny clues. Thanks again to Miles and Giles and the Mindful Chef team, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you blimmin' lovely lot for listening. I'll see you next Monday.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.